The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Matthew Stafford never had a playoff win until this campaign. Now can he go win the Super Bowl? Stafford throws the fade, back shoulder. Cooper Kupp's got it! Matthew Stafford's done it again.
They need to gain one to keep their hopes alive in Super Bowl 56.
Burrow to throw for it. He flings it away on fourth down. Aaron Donald got there. The greatest of all time on defense does it in the biggest moment of Super Bowl 56. A Lombardi Trophy for Los Angeles. The Los Angeles Rams are world champions.
The Rams Super Bowl parade is going on right now. It's already been a whole lot of fun. We'll bring you live pictures from that and the reaction that you need to hear. Plus, you will not believe what Aaron Donald said. Don't miss that. Welcome to NFL Live. We got a whole good crew right here. Adam Schefter's with us for the hour. Booger McFarland, Keyshawn Johnson coming up a little later. We'll tell you why someone here thinks the Dolphins still don't have the quarterback they need to lead them to a Super Bowl despite hiring a new coach. But let's begin with the Super Bowl champs, the Rams. As I said, their parade currently going on. Let's get the confetti going here in the studio. We're partying with them. Why not? It's Rams house. So I'm told that they went down Figueroa. He's going to correct me here, the LA expert probably. But look at them. The floats, they're ready to go. They're actually, people were throwing some beverages their way even, and they were catching them. You see Whitworth, the cigar smoking of Matthew Stafford. And let's hear from the best moments of today's parade right now.
Hey, here's what I know. The late John Madden said that winning the Super Bowl was the highest of high. So you know what? Our players, our coaches, Stan, his family, every one of us in the organization who support him on that mission, and everyone out there, you know what? We know what that highest high feels like today. So in honor of the shirt, F them picks, we'll use them to go win more Super Bowls.
For all you guys here, but I can't say enough about this team, the resiliency, the mental toughness, Super Bowl champs, they will never, ever get old. Give it up for those players right there getting it done. Woo!
I mean, are we kidding? We throw a touchdown to Cooper Kupp, who makes the play. Give it up for Cooper Kupp. Ridiculous. The guy's unbelievable. And then Aaron Donald comes out and makes a play, two plays in a row, really, to get the job done for us. I didn't even know it was fourth down. I feel like a bad player for that. But you know what? At the same time, I'm damn happy to be standing up here with you guys celebrating this. Come on. You guys have been unbelievable. Unbelievable all year. And you know what? We appreciate you.
Sean McVay just tapped me on the shoulder. He wanted to know if you were interested in running it back.
Run it back! 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 Give it up for Aaron Donald! What a stud! Everything!
We built a super team. We can bring a super team back. Why not run it back? We can be world champions.
Yeah!
Again. It was like pure entertainment. And by the way, Key's loving this. There weren't a lot of shirts being worn at that party. It's like when we have an NFL Live party, we don't wear shirts either. Adam, I want to start with you on what we just heard from Aaron Donald there, because rumors about him potentially considering retirement. Didn't seem like a guy who was going to retire right there, did he?
Yeah, Laura, much to the disappointment of all the teams in the NFC West, he did not sound like a player who is ready to retire at this point in time. And he is due a contract of $14 million next season, which is a good salary, but not a salary in line for arguably the best defensive player in all of football. And so I think what the Rams are hoping here is that some time will pass, Aaron Donald's body will begin to feel better, they will come to him with a incentivized, newly reworked contract, And by the time he's got some time off and he sees the value of the new contract, that will be enough to bring him back. But he certainly sounded today like a man who was interested in playing another year. And I can tell you that that soundbite did not go over well in the offices of the other NFC West teams.
Everyone's like, no, we thought this guy might be done. So GM Les Snead referred to this. He's wearing a shirt today that essentially says, screw them picks. Are the Rams, Adam, set up to run it back with, once again, no first-round picks? How do they do it?
Well, it's pretty simple, Laura. Again, they don't have high picks, but they've got as many picks in the mid to late rounds as any other team. And over the last few years, they haven't had fewer picks or less picks than any other team out there, but it's the top picks that get the attention. They've opted to trade their top picks for players like Matthew Stafford and Von Miller, and you see how that's worked out. It's worked out quite well. They're holding a parade in Los Angeles today, and there's a chance that they can manipulate the draft even further this April to get back more picks. I don't think they're worried about not having picks, and they've been very creative when it comes to the salary cap and finding ways to fit in what they need to. And they always have that secret recipe in their pocket. They can restructure Matthew Stafford's contract and free up more money if that's what they need to do. It's something that they've waited to do, and it's something that they could unfurl this offseason. So they've got tricks up their sleeve, and they're not going to just pass along peacefully going into next season.
And Adams is completely right there. Laura, they can manipulate the salary cap however they want to because they have an owner who is flush with cash. And all they're going to do is move things around, you know, kick the can down the road, pay for it later. And if you need to convert things into signing bonuses, that's simple and plain to do. When you look at some of their free agents, so to speak, Von Miller's on the backside of his career. He's not going to command $15, $20 million. So that's an easy deal. OBJ is coming off what we, most of us, perceive as an ACL injury. Most likely they will re-sign him because he's done a terrific job for them. Sonny Michel, so on and so on. And you think about some of the higher-priced guys, like you mentioned in Matthew Stafford. You go to your quarterback, you're going to probably extend him at some point in time. Anyway, you give him an extension, you give him new money up front, everything is all good, you run it back.
You know, it's really hard to be serious with some analysis here after you see Les Snead's shirt that says F the picks. You see Aaron Donald with no shirt on. You see liquored up Matthew Stafford. And we're supposed to come up with some great analysis.
Look,
right here.
Be serious,
I just
okay?
marvel.
Come
Key,
on.
You remember our parade, Key. I marvel
don't,
at
I don't know that,
that
we was
parade
that drunk.
And what they're doing, Laura.
Hey.
But,
I mean, we
I
didn't
don't
get
know
that,
that
drunk,
we was
Key,
that wasted,
we
were we?
Fun, Key.
God.
Yeah, Key, I mean, think about this, Key. At least we kept our clothes on. They're shirtless going down L.A. and they're drinking Ace of Spades, and Laura's coming to me asking me about what they're going to do in the offseason.
Look,
who gives a rat's you know what? Right now, they are world champions. They will make the salary cap whatever they need to make it. First of all, second of all, they got to figure out, let me get serious, they got to figure out what they're going to do at the receiver position because Robert Woods and Odell Beckham are both coming off presumably ACLs. And we saw my guy Ben Skowronek, I love you, but we've seen enough drops so far from you in that offense. I think you have Cooper Kupp, you have Jefferson. They got to figure out another piece from a receiver standpoint. But again, they'll figure it out. Les Snead is the master of manipulating the salary cap. And after all, he could really give a rat's you-know-what about the picks.
Boog, I'm really frustrated because you started to go real fun there, and then you got all serious on it. I was really excited to follow up on you and Key's Super Bowl parade. Maybe you guys didn't take your shirts off because you didn't have the bodies that Aaron Donald and some of those guys. Could that possibly be the reason, Key? Can you set the record straight?
No, I just wasn't. I wasn't into that, that's all. It was a couple guys that took their shirts off.
I don't know if you've seen Key lately. Key couldn't take his shirt off right now. Maybe I could now, but Key definitely couldn't.
I also don't
remember Key being the type of guy that liked to draw attention to himself back when
he
played. I don't remember him
not.
Being that kind of guy.
All right, here you go, a guy who didn't cover me. Don't get me started on you, Adam.
All right, so I do want to point this out. You see it on the screen right here. Tom Brady tweeted out to Matt Stafford, mix in a water, Matt. Trust me. Remember last year, Brady had one too many avocado tequilas or whatever those were, margaritas. All right, Adam, you've got some more from top stories today, beginning with someone who is leaving the Rams. Tell us about that.
Fuller, who's got a better 24-hour period than the Rams offensive coordinator, or soon-to-be former offensive coordinator, Kevin O'Connell, goes to the Super Bowl parade today, has a chance to celebrate with the Rams, then say goodbye to them, and then go to Minnesota to be introduced as the head coach of the Minnesota Vikings on Thursday. He inevitably will bring some of the assistants from the Rams with him to Minnesota, and the Rams have an opening now at the offensive coordinator position. So that move will set off another chain reaction of moves. There'll be a lot of things going on right now. Zach Taylor gets an extension in Cincinnati right now through the 2026 season. The Bengals wasted no time in locking him up. He was the lowest paid head coach in the league. No longer. He moves his salary up. He's tied to Cincinnati for the next five or so years. The Bengals are keeping their head coach. And at the press conference today, in which they discussed Zach Taylor's extension, he also said that Joe Burrow suffered a sprained MCL during the Super Bowl. Played through that injury, almost led the Bengals to a come-from-behind victory with that sprained MCL. Only enhances the legend of Joe Burrow at that point in time. But again, he will be able to come back, go through the offseason program, not a long-term serious injury, fortunately, for Cincinnati.
Yeah, more from Adam throughout the show. The toughness of Joe Burrow, undeniable. To a developing story today, an ESPN investigation has uncovered alleged acts of voyeurism by a recently retired team senior vice president. Acts that occurred while he was working for the Cowboys. One of the incidents involves four Dallas Cowboys cheerleaders who in May of 2016 were paid a settlement of nearly $2.5 million collectively. ESPN investigative reporter Don Van Natta Jr. has the story.
In 2015, a senior Cowboys executive was accused of voyeurism, including spying on four Dallas cheerleaders in their locker room while they were undressing. Multiple sources tell ESPN that at a kickoff luncheon on September 2nd of that year, Richard Dalrymple, the Cowboys' longtime senior vice president of public relations, was seen by a cheerleader standing behind a partial wall inside their locker room at AT&T Stadium. The cheerleader accused him of pointing his iPhone horizontally at the women as they were changing out of their unmistakable blue and white uniforms. Documents obtained by ESPN show that in 2016, team owner Jerry Jones paid the four cheerleaders and their lawyers a $2.4 million confidential settlement. As part of the agreement, the cheerleaders promised to keep quiet about the alleged incident. Three people with knowledge of the situation told ESPN, shortly after the alleged incident, a Cowboys security guard wanted to report the allegation to the police, but law enforcement was never called. A team representative said the security guard never mentioned wanting to call the police in his interview with Human Resources later that day. According to the sources, team officials urged the four cheerleaders to report the incident to the team's HR department, and they did, but they were unsatisfied with the resulting investigation. A separate allegation involving Dalrymple centers around the April 2015 NFL draft. ESPN has obtained a sworn affidavit by a Cowboys fan who claimed while watching a live video stream of the team's draft war room, he noticed Dalrymple repeatedly using his phone to take what he called upskirt photographs of Charlotte Jones Anderson, a Cowboys executive vice president and Jerry Jones's daughter. The fan's affidavit was presented to the Cowboys by lawyers representing the cheerleaders, and within several weeks, the Cowboys settled with them. ESPN was not able to obtain a copy or view the war room video in question. A Cowboys representative told ESPN the team had been aware of that allegation prior to the affidavit being presented by the cheerleaders' lawyers. The team says it thoroughly investigated both alleged incidents, including an examination of Dalrymple's phone. The team representative said, "The organization took these allegations extremely seriously. The investigation was handled consistent with best legal and HR practices, and the investigation found no evidence of wrongdoing." The team representative said a disciplinary letter was placed in Dalrymple's personnel file, but the Cowboys declined to release that letter or any details resulting from its investigation. Team owner Jerry Jones also declined to comment. A Cowboys representative says Dalrymple told the team he entered the locked cheerleaders' dressing room with his security key card only to use the bathroom and left as soon as he realized someone was there. In a statement to ESPN, Dalrymple says, "I understand the very serious nature of these claims and do not take them lightly. The accusations are, however, false. One was accidental and the other simply did not happen." Dalrymple was employed with the Cowboys for the last 32 years. However, he announced his immediate retirement on February 2nd. He told ESPN, "This had nothing to do with my retirement from a long and fulfilling career, and I was only contacted about this story after I had retired."
For more on this story, go read Don Van Natta's story on ESPN.com.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
Glad you're with us on NFL Live today. Todd McShay released his mock draft 2.0 earlier. One of the highlights, just 4 quarterbacks taken in the first round and none in the top 10. It's a lot different than last year's draft. And for more on these quarterbacks, let's welcome in Todd McShay. Todd, take us through these QBs. Let's start with Kenny Pickett, who you have as pick number 11, the highest in your mock, going to Washington in this latest draft.
Yeah, Pickett, he has game experience. Let's start there. 50 starts at Pittsburgh and had his best season in this past season in 2021. You just look at him, what he can do. He's so good inside the pocket. He feels where pressure's coming from. He can elude it. He's a better athlete than he gets credit for. He also has very good ability to go through his reads quickly. He processes things as fast as any quarterback in this class, and he's accurate on all three levels. That's why I think he's the most NFL-ready of all the quarterbacks in this group. Now, after him, Malik Willis, he's not as NFL-ready, but he's the most physically gifted. It's not even close. Malik is a dynamic runner, explosive athlete who can turn a 5-yard loss into a 7-10-yard game. And also, he has the strongest arm of all the quarterbacks, but he's still developing. I'm not saying don't start him as a rookie, but you're going to have more bumps with him in the road than some of these other guys, but I think his ceiling is higher than all of the other quarterbacks. Then there's Matt Corral, who I had going number 18. 17 was a trade up for Pittsburgh. Then one pick later would be 18 Corral, who's just a gamer. He's a winner. He's tough. He's aggressive with his play. He carried the ball 30 times in one game, and I love that about him. And I love his accuracy and the way he can get the ball out quickly. But with a smaller frame and as much as he likes to run, can he stay healthy? The answer was no at Ole Miss over time. And then finally, the fourth quarterback off the board, Sam Howell from North Carolina. I had him going with the final pick in the first round. Detroit picks at number 2 overall. I gave him Aiden Hutchinson with that pick at defensive end, and then the quarterback Howell at 32. It makes sense because you get that fifth-year option taking a quarterback, and while there's still a lot of work to be done in Howell's game, especially going from that simplistic offense in North Carolina to the National Football League, I just think he's a Dan Campbell kind of guy. He loves the game. He's tough. He's gritty. That whole organization has become a blue-collar organization. They fight hard, and that's the kind of player that Howell is. It wouldn't surprise me if Dan Campbell and that staff fell in love with Howell and decided, you know what, let's go get him at number 32 with that second first-round pick that we have in this year's draft.
Yeah, those teams with a couple of first-round picks, really interesting. Todd, we'll throw your mock back up on the screen so people can visualize it. But early on, you got some offensive linemen. You got D linemen. There's not quarterbacks in the top 10, as we just talked about. Why is that? What is it about this group of QBs that has them going a little bit later, as you see here?
I know I'm boring the viewers and the audience here. But listen, the bottom line is the grades don't match up with what should be a top 10 pick. But I'm also realistic, and we've seen it in a lot of years. 2014 was the best example. Blake Bortles is the number 3 overall pick. shouldn't have gone that high, and we could see something similar. Carolina's picking at 6. They have a quarterback need. You look at number 8, the Falcons could possibly be looking for the future. Maybe Malik Willis is a good player to bring in, develop him behind Matt Ryan for a year. And then at number 9, Denver's, are they going to get one of these big-name quarterbacks? Is Aaron Rodgers really going to go to the Broncos, or do they have to go the draft routes? It remains to be seen at this point. But, again, it won't shock me if we see a quarterback or two get bumped up into the top 10. But right now, the grades just don't match up.
Yeah. And if you look at it, Todd, in the second part of the round, we got Washington at 11, Indy at 16, Pittsburgh at about 20. There's a group of teams in the middle of the round that also need a quarterback.
Yeah.
And so, as usual, the demand for a quarterback greatly exceeds the supply of quarterbacks who's going to be available. And all these teams that need quarterbacks, not every one of them, in fact, most of them, will not be able to acquire a quarterback that they want during free agency. And so once we get past that, we then can figure out who might really be in the quarterback market. And as usual, I think the demand this year in this draft might be greater. It's just not the type of draft that has all those quarterbacks be top picks this year.
Yeah, Shift, and I think even before you get to the draft, I think everyone is going to want to see what happens with Aaron Rodgers, what happens with Deshaun Watson, throw in Russell Wilson. What's going to happen with these quarterbacks even before we get to the draft? And throw in Jimmy Garoppolo. I think those are 3 or 4 quarterbacks that could alter the draft a little bit, because if they're on the move, they're moving around. All of a sudden, if you're Denver and you get Aaron Rodgers, you don't need a quarterback. And so I think the free agency period where – teams are filling their rosters out, or starting to fill their rosters out, is really going to have an imprint on this draft to see where those guys go. And as far as the draft is concerned, McShay, I like your idea of Kenny Pickett, man, when you talk about NFL ready, because I think the one thing the last draft taught us is it's not always about the guy that can run the fastest or is the biggest, as we've seen with Trey Lance, who's having trouble out in San Francisco. Give me the guy that can process information and deliver the football accurately and on time. And that's what Mac Jones did. That's why he had the best rookie season of them all.
When you look at number 18 and you got the New Orleans Saints potentially going after Matt Corral, which makes sense if they wanted to go young at the quarterback spot. But I'm thinking they want to go more veteran because of the way the team makeup is right now. They got players that's ready to pop that bubble and get them back into serious playoff contention and even possibly making a Super Bowl run. And with a young quarterback, I don't see what that for them. Russell Wilson was attached to them a year ago. His agent put that out there that the Saints was a possibility. They got a first-round pick packaged up with some other things. Go get a veteran quarterback and maybe a younger quarterback later on in the draft to develop over time.
Yeah, it's interesting, Key, because the Saints currently projected to have the least amount of cap space of any team this offseason. So that factors in big time when it comes to who they could grab.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the upcoming draft, the playoff intensity, and finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sports book bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Glad you're with us on NFL Live. Time to read and react. And let's begin with the Cowboys. They have some questions circulating that guy, their head coach, Mike McCarthy. He was asked about all this on the Rich Eisen show yesterday. Here's what he said.
Jerry's the owner, he's the GM, and he's always taking a 360-degree view of everything. We talked about Dan's situation, talked about Sean Payton's narrative also. We discussed all these things. I never once felt that I was not going to be the head coach moving forward. And frankly, I've been at this long enough. That's all I'm focused on. And are these narratives unusual? Yeah, absolutely. I've never dealt with anything like this. At the end of the day, it's about the people that you're in charge of. It's about the people you coach. And most importantly, it's about our locker room. And our locker room's about winning.
He literally said Sean Payton's name. What's your reaction to McCarthy's comments?
Well, at least he's smart enough to recognize and realize that it's all in his hands. If he wants those rumors to go away, the Dallas Cowboys and Mike McCarthy got to go out there and win big, and not just get bounced out of the first round of the playoffs, but take it to the NFC Championship game, take it to the Super Bowl, because Sean Payton is going to be hovering around the Dallas area all season long. You must trust me on that one.
Yeah, everyone's going to be talking about it. I mean, Sean Payton was asked about it even in his own retirement press conference. So that's going to be a story key to your point. Let's get to the Bengals coming off a tough loss at the Super Bowl where quarterback Joe Burrow sacked 7 times. Here's former Colts and Bills GM Bill Polian on the Adam Schefter podcast. That guy earlier this week. Listen.
But I think the resilience of Burrow is incredible. He's a tough guy. I hope that he doesn't turn into Andrew Luck. I mean, if they got to, Mike Brown knows what he's doing and Duke Tobin knows what he's doing. They got to fix that before he ends up being injured, and which will affect his long-term career. So they got to do that, and I know they know that.
You know, even last year when Joe Burrow was injured, so many of the conversations revolved around the Andrew Luck comparisons. Yeah. Adam, what more can you tell us about your conversation with Bill Polian?
Well, what I found interesting, Lori, is that I asked him about Bill's reaction to Joe Burrow withstanding the pressure that he did during the postseason. And the thing that he said was that he just hopes that Joe Burrow doesn't turn into another Andrew Luck. And if you look at the amount of times Andrew Luck was sacked and the games he played compared to the times that Joe Burrow has been sacked and the games he's played, it's very similar. And Andrew Luck essentially broke down physically. And I think the Bengals want to make sure that they don't do the same thing, that they do everything to upgrade that offensive line this offseason. Yeah. Everything.
Yeah, and Adam, they do have some money to spend. We'll continue to talk about that. The Bengals did get some good news this week. Head coach Zach Taylor got an extension through the 2026 season that was announced today. He spoke about what his focus is this offseason.
I think we'll just look to improve the team in any way that we can, you know, and not specific to one necessary group. You know, the offensive line helped us get to the Super Bowl, you know, and they gave us opportunities to go win the Super Bowl. And everything always falls on them statistically, but that's not always the case. You know, there's play calls that could be better to help put them in a better position. We'll continue to find ways to build our team in the years to come, you know, and again, we've got a taste of the Super Bowl. We know it's going to take a lot of hard work to get there, and we're going to continue to work through that, you know, over the course of the offseason, the training camp, and next season to do everything that we can to get back.
So, Boog, you know, the priorities are kind of obvious, right? As for the Bengals' offseason lookout, it feels like they need to make sure they get this O-line solidified. How do they do that?
Well, they're going to have to do it by trying to find every available offensive lineman, not only in the draft, free agency, scour the earth, look under rocks, go to 7-Eleven. Anytime somebody's big is at a location, they should go and look how big that guy is because they need bodies. This was the worst offensive line I think some of us have ever seen. Joe Burrow got sacked 70 times this year. Now, I will agree with Zach Taylor. It's not their only position of need. They got to figure out Eli Apple because at the end of the day, offenses are targeting Eli Apple and going at them. And regardless of what Hendrickson and Hubbard do, anytime Cooper Kupp was matched up one-on-one with Eli Apple, Matt Stafford and Sean McVay were licking their chops. So, yes, offensive line, but they also got to get another corner to help their defense.
Yeah, it's an important point. Book said, look at 7-Eleven. You might find an O-lineman there. As for the Bengals' offseason outlook, roster management system projects them, as I mentioned to Adam, they've got over $48 million in cap space this offseason. That's currently the fourth most in the NFL. Their biggest priority this offseason, of course, how to better protect the franchise superstar. That's Joe Burrow. As Book mentioned, he's sacked a million times. 70 might as well be a million. Cincy's biggest free agent safety is Jesse Bates. Armina Kimes said yesterday, he needs to be re-signed. He was the defense's leader, the catalyst throughout their postseason run, and maybe has solidified himself as one of the best defensive safeties in the league. Adam, what more can you tell us about the Bengals' offseason plans?
Well, listen, Laura, there are some attractive free agent offensive linemen. Teron Armstead from New Orleans, Brandon Scherff from Washington, Ryan Jensen from Tampa, and whatever it is that the Bengals decide to do, I think the feeling around the league is that they have to upgrade the offensive line. They have to keep Joe Burrow intact. And the hope of that franchise revolves around the quarterback. Invest in the offensive line and keep Joe Burrow upright and healthy.
They took care of business with the coach. They got him done because I swear I thought he was on his way out. But He can buy a big house now in the Cincinnati area and get it done with that money that they just gave him. But Adam is right. They've got to address the offensive line. They've got to figure out the cornerback position in the secondary. And getting Bates back would be a big help to start that with that secondary. And I think when you look at it, a coach is going to protect his players. You heard him come out and say in his press conference it wasn't all on the offensive line. No, it was on the offensive line. They gave up 70 sacks. 70. You cannot continue to play that way and win football games with a healthy quarterback, and we all know this.
And think about the statement that that's going to make, Keith. Let's go back a year ago. Remember what happened to Patrick Mahomes in the Super Bowl? I mean, that offensive line was abysmal. The Buccaneers dominated. What did they do? They went out. They got Orlando Brown. They got Joe Tooney. They drafted Trey Smith. They drafted other guys. Like, they retooled the entire offensive line because Patrick Mahomes was just that important. Think about what will happen in Cincinnati if they don't do that. Like, we all realize Joe Burrow's a top five quarterback in football. What kind of statement will it not make, or will it make, if you don't go out and retool that offensive line? So, yeah, we're all saying the same thing, the offensive line. But do not be remiss if we do not see a corner or two, because, again, that defense was balling. You talk about the safety, Bates and Bell, Henderson and Hubbard. Yeah. You look at what Logan Wilson did. They got a lot of pieces, man. But at the cornerback position, if number 20 is still out there, I am targeting my entire game plan around him. So we can talk about the offensive line, but defensively, they have got to get another corner also.
Yeah, to the O-line, if they get all these guys in that they want, they've also got to gel. But one other point, McShay has the Bengals taking Bernard Raimann, the offensive tackle from Central Michigan, also from Austria. So get a little international swag in there.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, here's Todd McShay's complete 2022 NFL Mock Draft 2.0 first-round predictions, which are currently available via ESPN Plus now, so you can get an even deeper look there. But let's look at some of the takeaways from Toddy's most recent mock. Todd sees four quarterbacks going off the board in the first round. Pitts, Kenny Pickett, the first one off the board at 11th overall to Washington, and it'd be the first time since 2013 we didn't have a QB go in the top 10 picks. If that happens, Todd has six wide receivers in the first round, led by USC's Drake London going to Atlanta at 8th spot. He's got zero combined tight ends or running backs going in round one. It'd be the third time a running back didn't go in the first round in the common draft era. And five cornerbacks are drafted, starting with Sauce Gardner at 6th overall to Carolina, who took corner J.C. Horn 8th overall last year. Remember, this would mark the third straight draft where we've seen at least five corners go off the board in round one. So the Jets, Giants, Eagles, and Lions all have multiple picks in round one. Both New York teams are slated to have two picks in the top 10 as the Jets pick at 4th and 10th overall, while the Giants will pick at 5th and 7th overall in April's draft. So that's a way to really try to bolster your team quick, right? Todd, take us through the Jets' multiple picks. Let's start there first.
Yeah, number four, obviously there's a big need for the offensive line. And I had him going with Ikem Ekwonu, the offensive tackle from NC State. You just grab some popcorn and watch his pancake reel. And it'll be a blast, I promise. It won't let you down. This guy is powerful. He's great in the run game. He's become a very solid pass protector. And the Jets gave up 53 sacks a year ago. They've got to protect Zach Wilson better, and they've got to get a springboard for the run game with Michael Carter. So I think this would be a good pick at four. And then you go to 10. And basically, let the board come to you. Joe Douglas, the general manager, will do a great job of that again. Derek Stingley, if you go off his tape at LSU back in 2019, I think he's the number one player in terms of grade in this entire class. That's how great he was. Six interceptions back in 2019. But only 10 games played the last 2 years. He's had some injuries. Things fell apart with LSU as an entirety from the coaching staff down. He just wasn't the same player. But if he goes back to 2019, the Jets get a steal there. Quarterback, I think, is among the top three or four needs for that team. They also need an edge rusher. They could use some safety help, tight end as well. But if you get Stingley at 10, I think that's a steal.
You know, Todd, I like the fact that the offense alignment with the fourth pick works perfect. You protect your young quarterback, no question about it. You build that running game. But I think at 10, you the receiver position, if somehow they can get Drake London that you got slated at 8. Huh? Shocking? Well, it's not that. I'm talking about developing a young quarterback. You're protecting him. Now get some pass catchers because Corey Davis certainly hasn't worked out for him at the level that they think he could have when they signed him in free agency. And then you look at Elijah Moore, that's more of a jack-of-all-trades type, you know, specialty type wide receiver for them. So if you get a big red zone target like a Drake London, that puts a lot of easy throws in the red zone to a guy like Zach Wilson. That's why I say at 10, if somehow he falls to them or they can move up two spots, that's where you take that at.
Yeah, well, Keith, just a reminder to everybody, the Jets have drafted two wide receivers in the first round over the last 30 years, Santana Moss, 16th overall in 2001, and Keyshawn Johnson, first overall in 1996. Todd, I'm coming right back to you. Let's go to the Giants. Right. The Giants have the picks at 5th and 7th overall in the first round. What are we looking out of for them?
First of all, I just want to say I'm blown away by the fact that Keyshawn wanted a wide receiver from USC going at number 10. When he was off the board, by the way, at number 9. Anyway, the Giants. Kayvon Thibodeau to me would be, I mean, if he falls to number 5 for the Giants, the Oregon defensive end, it makes all the sense in the world. The Giants need offensive line help. There's no question about it. But I think they need an edge rusher just as much in terms of what they have on their roster right now. You look back at last year, yes, they got 8 sacks out of Aziz Ojulari. Leonard Williams is there, but Thibodeau would be a perfect complement to those two guys. And the Giants, as I mentioned, just 34 sacks last year, tied for 22nd in the NFL. Thibodeau, when you look at what he did this past year, yes, the tape is a little bit up and down, but he was second in the FBS with pressures. I mean, he's always around the quarterback when they're going to throw the football. So that would be a great pick there. And then the Giants, I had picking 2 spots later. And I think it's a little bit of a reach, but I gave him Charles Cross, the offensive tackle for Mississippi State. Great pass protector. 1 pressure allowed in 684 pass snaps this past year in Mike Leach's system. And certainly that would help out the Giants as they're trying to move forward with Daniel Jones to protect him.
Yeah, Todd, I love Charles Cross, obviously a seasoned pass protector as much as Mike Leach throws the ball. I'm curious from you, though. Kayvon Thibodeau, we've heard his name since he was a freshman. Do you think if he tests well, if he comes out and he looks the part, he runs 4.5, 4.6, do you think he'll make it to 5? Because I don't.
I think he's going to test well. His talent is the reason we've talked about him potentially as the number 1 pick, or him and Aiden Hutchinson from Michigan at 1-2. It's not the physical tools. It's just when you watch the tape after you study Hutchinson, and Hutchinson's like a crazed man. Every play is the last play that he's going to play in his life. And he's so prepared, and he does all the little things. Hutchinson, you see the talent. He's more talented than Hutchinson. But Thibodeau just, it's up and down, and you don't know what you're getting. That's why I think he's falling a little bit. I'm talking about 1 to 5. It's not a huge drop. It's not like a major flaw. But when you're starting to look at the investment of $25 million over a rookie contract, teams start to get a little bit nervous when you talk about the inconsistency.
Let's get to the Miami Dolphins hiring Mike McDaniel as their new head coach. McDaniel, most recently, of course, the offensive coordinator for the San Francisco 49ers, very familiar with that Kyle Shanahan system. And McDaniel was recorded speaking to his new quarterback, Tua Tagovailoa, for the first time right after the hire became official. Let's listen in on that.
One thing I know about you is you have the ambition to be great. My job is to coach you to get all that greatness out of you. And it's going to be fun, man. It's going to be work, but I know you're not afraid of that. So this is an awesome day for me. And I'm damn sure going to make sure that when you look back on this day, you're going to be like, damn, that was one of the best days of my career too. Okay? I'm elated, bro. It is an unbelievable opportunity for me that I do not plan on wasting in the slightest. I promise you that. I'm all in. You're going to get the best out of me that you could possibly get.
Nothing like listening to, like, one side of a FaceTime call. But anyway, Boog, so a lot of people talking about McDaniel's offensive philosophy and some of the things that the 49ers do. We think, obviously, he would take some of that to use with this Dolphins offense. The key there is the run game and the offensive line being strong. This Miami O-line struggles. What do you see for Tua in his future now?
Yeah, it's going to be a little different. You know, Mike McDaniel, a lot of people didn't know about him, but he was kind of the mastermind behind what they did in San Francisco with Kyle Shanahan. So you bring that type of offense to Miami, you want to run the football, a very, very intrinsic run game, but you also have to do the play action off of that. I think Tua can do some things because he's definitely athletic and has some mobility. But at the end of the day, your quarterback has to be able to drop back and throw the football. And we've seen Jimmy Garoppolo struggle in that type of offense. And I think Tua will also. I think the bigger question in Miami is they have to ask themselves, can Tua win in January? We just saw one of the most unbelievable playoff run from a lot of quarterbacks we've ever seen. Mahomes and Josh Allen and Joe Burrow. What do you think Tua Tagovailoa stacks up in that category? As a matter of fact, if you were to rank the top quarterbacks in the AFC, where would you put Tua? Just food for thought. So I think while they're going to have a little success running the football, they got to get the offensive line fixed. At the end of the day, when the rubber meets the road, they have to ask themselves one question in Miami. Can Tua beat the guys that we saw go on those runs in January? If they're really being honest right now, the answer is no.
Boog, you talk about running the football in the San Francisco 49ers. That offensive line is stout. That offensive line is big and aggressive. They don't have that in Miami. And I don't really know much about Mike McDaniel as a head coach or as the Miami Dolphins head coach because I didn't know anything about him, much about him as a coordinator, other than he comes from that Shanahan, Denver, Houston, Washington, San Francisco kind of tree, been around the Gary Kubiaks of the world, the Mike Shanahans, the Kyle Shanahans. But it's a difference when you are installing a run game versus calling plays overall. You are now the head coach. You now have to sign off on things opposed to the head coach signing off on things you may suggest. So I don't really know what to make of his situation. I know a lot of people say, hey, he's going to be dynamic. He's going to be dynamic. How do we know what he's going to be? We have no idea, Laura.
Yeah, it's interesting because the Dolphins are actually projected to have the most available cap space this offseason. They tried to put some offensive linemen in there. We'll see if they can get some more to protect him and what else they might add around Tua Tagovailoa as he gets another opportunity as their quarterback. A lot more NFL Live to come, of course, the rest of this week. We'll see you tomorrow. And don't miss Todd McShay's Mock Draft 2.0. It's coming your way over on ESPN2. All the latest there with Todd and Mel. And we'll see you tomorrow on NFL Live.